This is a Discover episode where we learn about the daunting world of finances. In this episode, we invite Emma from TradeM in Instagram to walk us through her FIRE journey and her investing strategy. Emma has developed her own budgeting system and is an experienced side hustler. She's going to tell us all about it. Ready? Let's go.
This is the Say Yes to FIRE show. And now, join the conversation with Susanna Say Yes as she takes you on a mind-opening journey into the daunting world of financial independence and retiring early. We interview guests, we talk about stocks, crypto, and more. Streaming to the world and beyond. And beyond. Your Mondays will never be the same. Ready? Three, two, one. FIRE.
Hi there. Hola. ¿Qué tal? You're listening to the Financial Diaries of a Millennial on her way to financial independence and retiring early. That millennial is me, Susanna, your host. Do you want to retire early and be wealthy? If that is a sound yes, jump into this financial journey where we figure out together how to make your money work for you and not the other way around. Disclaimer, this is free financial education, guys. Not financial advice. Oh, don't forget to follow Say Yes to FIRE on Instagram
and Twitter.
Let's dive right in. Achieving FIRE is a whole entire journey, and it's different for everyone. It encompasses from budgeting and personal finance tracking to investing and side hustling. In this episode, we are going to focus on budgeting and side hustling. Let me tell you why budgeting is important. It helps you control your spending, track your expenses, and you can save more money. Additionally, budgeting can help you make better financial decisions, prepare for emergencies, and get you out of debt, and stay focused on your long-term financial goals. Put simply, living on a budget is a fundamental component of your FIRE journey. Also, if you're looking for ways you can earn a few extra bucks, you can do side hustling. Depending on your unique needs and your skills, you can earn a respectable amount of cash, no matter where you're from or what you do for a living. Thanks to the conveniences afforded to us by the internet, making money should no longer be a constant and never-ending struggle. Before welcoming Emma, I want to say big thanks to Travis Brown for buying me a coffee. I really very much appreciate your support. I love podcasting, but it takes some big effort. So if you also would like to support me and buy me a coffee and help me recharge these batteries, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/sayyestofire. But with no longer ado, let's welcome Emma.
Hello, yeah, thank you so much for inviting me on. So, as you said, I'm Emma, and I'm from UK. I'm from the southeast of the UK, and I'm a teacher, secondary school teacher. I teach computer science. My Instagram is all about my investing journey. So I've started investing just over a year ago now, last June. So I'm just over a year on now, and I've started posting on Instagram around February this year, to kind of document my journey so I could see for myself if the investing was paying off and if I was kind of getting any returns and getting anywhere with it and if it was worth my time. And so far, I've been very, very happy with it, and, you know, I'm getting somewhere. So it's been a good journey so far, but obviously I'm still very much at the beginning at the moment.
Yeah, honestly, I really love your account. I've been following you for a while, and I think it's really cool what you're doing, really.
Thank you.
But you also say in your account that you are in the FIRE journey.
That's right, yes.
How did you discover that journey, Emma?
When I started investing, as I said, like a year ago, I kind of started to get into the community online. So YouTube initially, and then Instagram, and it kept coming up. I kept seeing things about it. And that's, so I sort of read up on it and found out that it's financial independence, retire early. And I thought, well, yeah, that, you know, that's the dream, being able to be financially independent, meaning that I don't have to work. I don't have to retire early, but equally, I don't have to work. So if I wanted the option to cut down my working hours, you know, to retire early at some point, then to have that option would be amazing. So that's sort of how I kind of stumbled across the movement online, in like on social media. And yeah, it just really appealed to me to actually think, as a teacher, my retirement age, I think, is meant to be 68 at the moment. And who wants a 68-year-old teacher in the classroom for secondary school for like teenagers? Teenagers don't want a 68-year-old teacher. And I don't want to be in the classroom when I'm 68. I don't think I'll have the energy. It's hard enough in the 30s, let alone in your 60s. So to have that option was something that that really drew me into it.
I think you make a brilliant point here. Is it the journey that you're doing together with someone, maybe?
Not really. No, it's more being driven solely by me at the moment. Obviously, I drop little hints in here and there to my partner, but he's not on board yet. But I think one day, you never know, you know, just sort of, obviously, I'm doing a lot of it myself, but he has started a lifetime ISA. So he's got a little bit of investments going now, and he does have a trade in 212. And a free trade account as well. So he's got a few, a little bit in the kind of stock market. So he's not on board as such, but he's dipping his toe in. So you never know, one day he might be fully on board as well.
Yeah, I think it's funny because I am in the same situation. My partner is not completely on board yet. But we are definitely getting there with investing. But Emma, do you have a FIRE number?
I'm trying to work it out this year, because since I sort of started finding out about FIRE on, you know, Instagram and things this year, I've really started a budget, and I'm looking at what I spend each month, and I kind of want to do that for at least a year, so I'm really accurate with what I actually am going to want it to be. So I've, in my mind and from things I've read, I think that it probably needs to be around £500,000. But as I say, I'm going to work my budget for a year at least and see like what my monthly outgoings need to be. But I'm not being particularly frugal. I'm not sort of really cutting corners at the moment. So I think this year would be like a fair reflection of what I need to spend to kind of get that FIRE number. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, indeed. I understand. I'm also not on the frugal side. I'm not that kind of FIRE. What I'm trying to do is to, let's say, save around 30% a month of my income and then invest it and try to find smart investments and asymmetric bets. But may I ask you a question? When do you plan to retire? Let's say, because you're doing this FIRE journey, so do you have like a certain age in mind?
My goal age is 55, but with the budget and with seeing how my investments go over the next 5-10 years, it would be great if I could bring that down. But that's like my maximum goal age at the moment. But I'm hoping I can reduce that over time, depending on how the market goes and how my investments go and personal circumstances. Because at the moment, you know, we've got a house, we've got a mortgage. We're due to have paid that off in 15 years. So that's all going to help. But then I don't know if we'll have a family down the line, and that's going to be extra costs at some point. So there's all of those things to factor in. And obviously, if I have a family, I might have to take some time off of work and things like that. So yeah, at the moment, my kind of maximum goal is 55. But if I can bring that lower, then that would be great.
I think that's a great plan, honestly. And I think you touch a very important point here, because I think sometimes we do not realize that our FIRE journeys have many, many variables that are, let's say, attached to it. And one of these variables, especially for us women, is if we want to have children, you know?
Yeah.
And indeed, so I think that's a very, very fair point. So talking about goals and strategies, do you have a main strategy to achieve FIRE and retire, let's say, at age 55?
Yeah, so I'm doing something very similar to you in that I'm trying to invest 30% of my monthly income in. So we're sort of quite on a joint kind of journey here. But yeah, so I'm putting 30% into my investments. So I'm putting a set amount into my lifetime ISA, because in the UK, we have these lifetime ISAs, which you can pay in up to £4,000 per year. And the government top up, they give you a 25% bonus on whatever you put in. So if you put in £4,000, they give you £1,000 every year. You're only allowed...
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You're only allowed to put in from the ages of 18 to 50. So once you're 50, you can't put any more in at that point and you can't get any more bonuses. And then you can withdraw from it when you're 60. So I'm trying to max that out every year now. I've only just opened it at the last tax year end. So I opened it just before the tax year ended at the end of March. And so I maxed out that last year. And now this year I've budgeted to put in a bit each month to max it out again. Obviously going into that lifetime ISA, and I'm getting a 25% from the government, and I'm also investing that index funds or ETFs. So it's got that potential growth as well as the government bonus that I get. But as I said, I can't touch that until I'm 60. So alongside that, I'm also investing in a stocks and shares ISA, an investment ISA, and I am investing in, again, like index funds and ETFs there as well.
That is so interesting, because I don't think that, let's say, in, well, at least in Spain or in the Netherlands, I don't think that the government, let's say, rewards you for having such an investing account.
Yeah, no, I only found out about it through Instagram. So I've only found out about it this year. Otherwise, you know, if I'd known longer ago, I could have been investing since I was 18, but I missed out all of those years. But at least I know now. That's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the main important thing. I'll have to research too then. Now you left me wondering whether we have that. You mentioned budgeting, and I think we can all agree that budgeting is, let's say, one of the main pillars of FIRE, of achieving this financial independence. So how do you build your budget? Because I've seen that you have a very specific budget on your Instagram account, and I was very curious to ask you, how did you build that? How did you come up with those numbers, with those percentages?
Yeah, to kind of rewind it back, I never used to think I needed a budget, because I never, like, I always had enough money to keep. I'm not one of these people who are like living paycheck to paycheck. I always had enough and I was able to put some savings aside. But it's only since doing this, the whole sort of FIRE thing, where I've like actually drilled down and looked at what I'm actually spending. And then since I've done that, I've found I've been able to save so much more. So it has been really, really helpful. But what I did was I made a spreadsheet and I listed all of my bills, all of my outgoings, and then just worked out like what percentage each bill and whatever it is goes to. So like for internet access, for your mobile phone, that sort of thing. So I just worked out what each thing was, then looked at how much I had left over, and then allocated an amount into the investing, an amount into that lifetime ISA I mentioned as well. And I also have an amount going out to a savings account, just because I've got a bit of a extra interest rate on that at the moment. It's a little bit higher than the base rate. So yeah, that's how I came to it, really. I just put down what I already do spend and then tried to allocate a bit. I allocated for my investments, my savings, and then whatever was left over, I split up for like socializing. Me and my boyfriend, we do like a takeaway night at home sort of thing. So we don't, like, we take it in turns to pay. So I've like done a bit for that. And I'm just trying to think what else is on my budget now. But yeah, that's just what I did. So I did my necessities, the things I do have to pay first, like the bills. Then I did my investments and savings. And then I split up everything else for like present giving, gift giving, and socializing and things like that. Like, you know, girly treats and stuff. Because when I made the budget, we were in lockdown, so we weren't really spending out that much. But now things are opening back up, I'm sort of starting to realise that maybe I need to allocate a little bit more to certain things. But it's okay, because I've got a contingency. I don't... do you know about zero budgets? Some people have zero budgets where they budget every single penny. So they've got like, they've got where everything's going, but I don't do that. I have a contingency fund left over. So if I spend more on something, I've got a float there to cover that sort of thing.
That's like a really good tip. And is that contingency plan, let's say, part of your safety net?
Yeah, it is. But I do actually have a separate emergency fund as well, which is outside of that, which is just money that I'd saved up over the years, just before I knew about investing, and I was just building a savings account sort of thing. So that's now my emergency fund.
Interesting. And may I ask, how much do you allocate, like in percentage, to, let's say, enjoyment or personal enjoyment?
You can indeed. I only share it in percentages because obviously people earn different amounts. So I thought sharing it in percentages makes it more accessible to everyone. Because otherwise some people might look at it and say, well, I don't earn anywhere near that, or I earn a lot more than that sort of thing. Okay, so at the moment, I have allocated for socialising and like that sort of shopping side of things, like we said, like clothing and makeup and so on. I've got about 6% of my monthly budget allocated to that, so not a whole lot, to be honest. So I could go a little bit more, but as I say, I've got the contingency fund. The contingency fund is another 6% on top, so I could tweak it a little bit.
How difficult has it been for you to stick to this budget, to these percentages?
So when I started and I made this, I think I made this around March time this year. And as I say, we were still in some sort of lockdown situation because of the pandemic. So at the time, it was really easy to stick to it. And I wasn't spending all of the money each month. But this month, I've already gone over budget on a couple of my categories. So at the moment, I've gone over in that clothing, shoes, makeup, skincare budget because I had my hair done on Thursday and that cost a lot. And over the last week, because it was the end of the school year, I've been out with some of my school teacher friends. And so I've gone over in my socializing budget as well.
No, but I think it's important, right, to enjoy our life. I mean, I always say to people that I do not define myself as a frugal person because I always try to strike a balance between my present and my future enjoyment. I think kudos to you that you're celebrating your life. And
we all work hard, don't we? So we deserve a bit of a party now and again.
Exactly. And do you have any practical recommendations for the audience when planning their own budget?
Yeah, so I mean, the way I worked mine out, I think that's sort of a good way to start because you've got to pay your bills. So you might as well budget out your bills first because, you know, to not get yourself in any financial trouble and be in any debt, you've got to get those bills paid. So I would budget in for those first. And if you're in any kind of debt, like you're paying back any loans or anything like that, then obviously that's got to be up there at the top too, because otherwise you're just going to get interest piling up on those sorts of things. Then it's all about paying yourself first. So then I would, after that, like the third priority, I'd put in your investments and your savings. So get that going out next. And then whatever is left over is your enjoyment budget then. So you can work out what you've got left and what you've got to play with for enjoyment. If you don't want to do a zero budget like I don't, then keep yourself a little contingency fund. Like if you go over on one of your budgets, you've got a little bit there to help you out, so it doesn't matter too much because then you're not going to stress about it, because the last thing you want to do with money is be stressed and be worried about it.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point here. Like the worst thing we can do with money is get stressed and get emotional, because I think then is when we make the worst decisions.
Definitely, yeah.
I've seen, now changing a bit of subject, I've seen that on your Instagram account, TradeM, you're focused on side hustling.
Yeah.
What are the main side hustles you're focused on?
I try and do a lot of side hustling, like maybe for a half hour or hour when I get home from work in the evenings. Because I'm a teacher, I live very close to my workplace. So my commute is a walk. And that means I sometimes get like a half hour to an hour before my partner gets home. So I use that time while I'm sort of at home on my own, winding down from work, to do a bit of side hustling. And the main thing I like doing, my favorite, is something called user testing. And it's a website and an app that you sign up to, and they get you to test websites or apps and record yourself. So you record your screen whilst you're testing them out and you talk through. So if I've tested, for example, a jewelry website, a well-known jewelry brand in the UK, and they had a feature where the rings, you could try it like with your phone camera, you could see what the ring would look like on your hand. So they got you to test out that feature on your phone, your screen recording it as you're doing it and you're talking through. They put questions up on the screen, so you have to answer the questions as you're testing it. And yeah, I really enjoy that, and it pays pretty well. It pays in US dollars, and you can, like, for a sort of 10-minute test, I get about $10 for about 10 minutes of my time. So that works out pretty well for me. It's, you don't get them all the time. So some days I'll log on and there won't be any tests. Sometimes I'll get like a couple in one day, and then other times I won't get any for 5 days, 7 days sort of thing. But that's probably my favourite thing to do, because I also mentioned I'm a computing teacher. So I really like working with, you know, apps and websites and things like that, because it's sort of in my background as well, my kind of educational background. And so that's probably my favourite for that reason, and the reason that it's well paid. And my second favourite is a website called Prolific, which is available in the UK. I don't know if it's available in other countries, but that is, it's, you answer surveys, but they're sort of academic research study type surveys. So it'll be for the purpose of university, like master students or PhDs and so on. It's quite interesting studies, and the pay is pretty good on there for the time. And it also breaks it down, so it tells you what you're going to get paid, how long the study is. So like you're going to get 80p for 6 minutes, and then it tells you what that is as an hourly rate. So you can think if it's worth your time, like would it be a good wage sort of thing. So I quite like that. And my third favourite, although I haven't had much on there lately, is an app called Influence. And what they do on that app is they ask you questions, and you have to like do a selfie video talking about the answer to that question. And it's only a 1 minute video clip. It stops after 1 minute, and yeah, you get paid anywhere between 25p to 63p for your 1 minute video clip.
That's really cool to know about this, because like at least this kind of side hustles, they're not very publicly seen. I don't know, like it's difficult to find them, yeah, unless like you heard it from someone. So I think it's really nice that you have explained this. But then let me get something right. Like these side hustles are giving you active income, right?
Yes.
Because you're exchanging your time for money.
Yeah.
My question would be, do you have any passive income side hustles?
Not so much, really, at the moment. That would be nice to build. Maybe one day the Instagram will get to that point. If I can continue to grow it, that would be nice to do. Do you know the online store Etsy?
Yeah, I do know it.
Yeah. So on Etsy, I have a teacher planner like a design for planning your lessons on. And it's only a couple of pounds. So I don't get much from it by the time they take off the VAT and so on, the tax. But I have that on Etsy. So occasionally I get a sale on there, and I get like a little bit here and there from that. So that's truly passive. And I also have, I use some cashback apps as well, and they're quite passive. So with the cashback apps, there is, for example, one in the UK called Airtime Rewards. And what that one does is you add your bank card to it. And when you purchase, you make a purchase at certain retailers that are signed up with the app, you get a percentage cashback. And once it builds up to a minimum of £10, you can redeem it off of your mobile phone bill. So, for example, I did a kind of makeup purchase the other week at Boots, which was about £35. My cashback for that was like £1.50 or something along those lines. So it just gradually builds up. And then, yeah, as I say, you can take it off of your mobile phone bill. So that's passive, because I just had to sign up to it, and then it just works in the background. And when I shop online as well, there are websites you can use to get cash back in the UK. So the two popular ones I use are Quidco and Top Cashback. I've got a video on how to use Top Cashback on my Instagram, actually. But essentially, you just go to the website first, you search for the retailer that you want to shop with, and if they're there, it tells you what percentage cashback you'll get. And then you click through from the cashback website, and it opens up in a new tab, the retailer website. You complete your purchase, and it tracks the purchase and gives you the cashback after a while. So they're sort of passive things that I can do in the background and get a little bit here and there.
Maybe going into another different topic, can you maybe name one embarrassing financial memory or purchase?
Yes, I can. My worst financial decision was getting a car on finance. I had finished university. I'd done my teacher training and I was in a teaching job. I'd had this, my other car throughout university sort of thing. So now I was in my career. I felt like I needed a car, like a nice car. I'm a teacher, you know, I needed a grown up car kind of thing. I went to this sales place, car sales place, where you could trade in your old car and get a newer, it wasn't a brand new car. It was like a new to me car. But I went, it was more expensive than what I could afford to buy outright. So I got it on finance. And these finance places are very clever because the way they sell it to you is they say, well, it only costs this per month. And you think, well, I can afford that per month. But when you actually look at the numbers, you realise that you're actually paying so much more than the price. So say it's like a £5,000 car. Once you add on all of the interest, you might be paying £7,000 for it or £8,000 for it. And that's where I really got stuck because I didn't pay attention to that. I was young and stupid, basically. And then a little while after having the car, I'd had it for a while, something in it went wrong, the head gasket, something like that. And so it was a very expensive job to fix, like hundreds and hundreds of pounds to fix it. So I took it to the garage, had to pay to get it fixed. But when they went, I don't know anything about mechanics, but I had to skim something down. But when they went in and looked at it, they said it had already been skimmed down previously. So obviously there was already something wrong with it when I bought it. So they did it a bit more, but it was still going wrong. The water just used to drain out of it, essentially. So it used to, yeah, it was a real problem. So I just had to trade it in the end with a reputable dealer, because I think the dealer where I initially got it from was not a very trustworthy place. So I then went to Ford and got a trustworthy Ford Focus after that. But I was in loads of debt because the money that I could trade it in for was less than I owed more on it than what I could get back on it, if you know what I mean. So I owed a lot more. So I was in negative equity. But luckily, my dad helped me out, bless him. And he paid it off. And he just let me pay him back over time without interest. So he really helped me out. Otherwise, I'd have been in debt for a long time over that. But that was my most embarrassing, stupidest financial mistake.
Well, but I think the most important is that you have grown from it and you've learned your lesson and you're never going to go to that dealer again.
Definitely.
Never. So do you have any personal finance podcast or Instagram account or YouTube channel that you can recommend to our audience?
Yeah, definitely. Well, to be honest, the person who first got me investing was my brother. And my brother has a YouTube channel called Free Your Finance. So his videos are really great and he provides some really great advice on investing. And he is also a property expert. So he has a number of rental properties and he talks about his journey with that. So I would definitely recommend to check out my brother Gary. And yeah, his YouTube is Free Your Finance. In terms of podcasts, apart from this one, of course, The Art of Money Saving, I've really been enjoying that. I was on that one a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago, and Joshua, who runs that, he interviews some really interesting people, so that's a great listen. And for kind of female empowerment in finance as well, In Her Financial Shoes is a really good one, if you're after a sort of good female-led podcast with that sort of side of things. So that's really interesting too.
Wow, thank you so much. I didn't know this once, but I'm definitely going to check it out. And I think our audience will also really like it. Final question. Where can people find out more about you, Emma?
Okay, so I'm just completely on Instagram at the moment. Just my username is trade_EM, trade M. I had to do a double underscore because a single one was not available. So yeah, trade_EM.
Okay. Thank you so much for this super fun conversation. I'm really, really happy to have you here. I think I've learned a lot and I have a lot of homework to do, if I'm honest.
Oh, thank you. I've really enjoyed our chat.
Let's rewind and see what we have discovered. One of the essential parts of budgeting is paying yourself first before the less essential purchases kick in. As Emma explained, there are many ways to side hustling. So if you want those extra bucks, just take half an hour a day, maybe instead of Instagramming, to do some reviewing or app testing. You can then invest this extra income or pay off your debt. In the next episode, we are going to get skilled on defining financial goals and your investment strategy. I'm going to tailor the episode to each of the financial personalities. Do you know what your financial personality is? If not, go to sayyestofire.com and press the green button. Free quiz. Till next time.
You've been listening to the Say Yes to Fire podcast. Consider yourself enriched. For the latest, go to SusannaSayYes.nl. That's Susanna, SELLES.nl. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from the show. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share. Remember, sharing is caring. Till next time.